The House of Cards seems to be crumbling. I don't know what's going to happen with the crumble, but it does seem to be happening. I'll talk about this in the second hour of the show. In the detention hall segment, we're going to send Moderna and the Ontario government to the gulag for the day. Big news. They're admitting that 1 in 5,000 men between the age of 18 and 24. Talk about the healthiest prime of life you could imagine. A young man between the ages of 18 and 24. 1 in 5,000 chance of developing myocarditis or pericarditis after taking the Moderna jab. And you know that means that there's probably 10 times as many. Because that's just what they're admitting. And you know that it means that that's only what happens after 14 days, because they don't count you as vax till you've had it in your system for 2 weeks. So goodness gracious, there's going to be a lot more. Think about the odds of dying or getting sick from the Rona at that age. It's like, it's literally 0%. Craziness, absolute craziness. So we got our guest on the line here, Jim Hale, talking about his broadcasting career, advocacy for the National Rifle Association, NRA, etc. Time spent with Christopher Hitchin, lobbying for the freedom of Iraq, so-called, before the war. So, Jim, you find yourself at the time of the Iraq War, and what happens after that, where you get to the point where you sort of kind of move away from the neocon life and to more of the, let's say, paleo-conservative type of mentality today?
Well, it's interesting because I didn't even realize what was happening. You know, I kind of continued to, because I really put my name out there and my neck out there by promoting the Iraq War, mm-hmm. and every other war that you can imagine. And, when I was in D.C., interestingly, that's where I was exposed to Catholicism. And I was a happy Calvinist at the time when I was mm-hmm. there. In fact, I was taking some seminary courses, and Reformed theology was a big part of who I was. And I would sneer at any Catholic that came along that would try to challenge me. But one, you know, when you're in D.C., you meet a lot of interesting Catholics. And I didn't even know it at the time when I was there, but I happened to meet a guy. Our kids went to the same preschool. Turns out he was the former editor of Crisis Magazine. And he started challenging me and just asking me questions, not in an adversarial way, but he invited me over to his house one night, and I remember he ordered Mexican food, and he put a bottle of single malt scotch on the table, and he said, "Let's talk." And I knew I was in trouble, because when I went into his house, his wife and his kids had all gone, and he was just there for me, and I was really humbled by that, you know, knowing that he took this time to be with me, and this was a well-known Catholic guy. His name is Scott Walter. And incidentally, I later found out he was the one who had met with Milo and was kind of Milo's mentor into the church, or one of his mentors. But he's just a guy from Tennessee that was a former Southern Baptist, but a real intellectual, because he had books from the floor to the ceiling in his house. And he started just talking to me about Sola Scriptura.
Yep.
Why that might not actually be biblical. And I started just really being intellectually honest and then learning about the Eucharist and confession and all these things. But I spent many years until it was finally just 3.5 years ago that I came into the church. Because I'd left Washington, I'd moved down to Richmond, Virginia. Where I continue working in issue politics. I've represented industry in a number of kind of just other conservative issues. But the whole time I was starting to see a lot of conflict between, you know, what I professed as the Christian faith and also just being a conservative. And then, I was influenced by Ron Paul somewhat he always seemed to have a real consistency when he was talking about foreign policy. And so it just finally all came together. It's really hard to explain, but when you really get serious about Catholicism and you begin to see where the evangelical faith is lacking, it's unsacramental. So you begin sacramentalizing things that aren't sacraments. It's all about your community. It's all about your small group and all these kind of things. Then you find out that, you know, people start letting you down. You get a resentment in your small group. Then you have to go find another small group. Eventually, you have to go find another church. Whereas, you know, like when you're a Catholic, it's like we just all show up and we're a bunch of bumbling idiots, and we kind of know that, but we can walk over there and go to confession, you know?
So it's and great, even, but, even though we have, well, we have issues, we know we can't go anywhere else. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we've got our own problems. We have, goodness gracious, God knows we have our problems now in the church. That's, maybe we can get to some of that in a minute, but we got nowhere else to go. So it kind of gives you this stability. It's like, well, you know, it's kind of like Peter, he says, to whom shall I go, Lord? So you started coming into the church and getting into it. Now, what was the, for you, what was the major, like for me coming, I was baptized Catholic. I was raised nominally Catholic. My mom's an Italian immigrant. So there was, you know, there was pictures of Mary around and stuff, but we never practiced or anything. And for me, a huge comeback. Two things. One was the philosophical tradition, because I was always a kind of a nerd. So reading stuff from these Aquinas types, it blew my mind. Same with Augustine, it blew my mind. I just thought, wow, these religious people are like, they're playing on God mode if it was a video game. They're way too smart. I don't understand this. Where's that from? And secondly, it was the rosary. It was going to Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe, and it just changed my life. And it was one of them was an intellectual experience. One of them was a heart experience. And they sort of both met finally, which was nice. What about you? What was a major moment for you that kind of made you make the jump?
Well, I remembered my wife and I, for our five-year anniversary, went to Paris. And just walking in Notre Dame, and I wasn't prepared for the impact. And I just looked up, and all of a sudden, I started thinking about my 16-year-old nephew who had died earlier that year in a horrible car crash. And I hadn't been thinking of him. I walked into this church, and I just, boom, I just was hit, and tears came to my eyes because of the beauty of it.
Wow.
And I just had this sense that my nephew was with our Lord. And it was, I mean, it's giving me chills right now to talk about it. And so that was one thing. And then it was the intellectual part. I love to read through it. I was reading the biography of Dostoevsky by Joseph Frank, a Princeton professor who wrote a five-volume biography of Dostoevsky. Then it was condensed down to like a 1,000-page, you know, one volume. And it is a real page turner of a book. I would highly recommend it to anybody. Joseph Frank's biography of Dostoevsky, and about how, you know, he was a wild man, a crazy guy with a gambling addiction and all this. But after he had gotten out of prison, he went to Paris and he went to London. This is in the mid 19th century, right? You know, when all the communist revolutions were happening, and he saw. How he said back then, he said, you know, Paris in England, these are godless people. They're materialistic. And you know, his take on it was that we need Mother Russia to save the world for Christ. But I started looking around the world. You know, I'd studied at the Institute of World Politics. And like I said, it was, you know, we kind of laugh now about being a neocon and all that. But look, neoconism is a plague upon mankind. I truly believe that now. If you look into the roots of it, it's so unconservative, Kennedy. You know that now. It's like, no, this is not what it means to be a conservative. Going to war is a government program. You know?
It's globalism. It's relatively socially conservative globalism, you know? So it gives you the trappings of, you know, we're pro-life or whatever. But even then, the pro-life arguments are really they're almost for material reasons. You know, it's almost like, well, we're pro-life because the birth rate's important. It's like, well, yeah, that's important, but we're pro-life because it's a sin. Like, we're pro-life because it's a matter of your salvation of your soul. Or, you know, we're open to, we believe in more economic freedom because, you know, it's good for the GDP. It's like, no, how about you just let me own my stuff because God said, here's a garden, you have dominion over it. Like, it's a commandment, you know? So it's got the ruse of being natural law-based, but it's not.
No, it's so not. And I'll tell you another great book to read. It's called The Fire Within. It's about the history of Brent Bozell Jr., not the Brent Bozell III that we know of today, that's head of the Media Research Center, but this was his dad.
Okay.
And he was best friends with William Buckley, married William Buckley's sister. You know, Buckley founded National
Review.
He was one of the co-founders of National Review and all that, one of the most influential people in conservative politics in the middle of the last century. He ghost wrote Barry Goldwater's famous book, The Conscience of a Conservative. But Brent Bozell formed his own magazine called Triumph because he realized back in the 60s and you know, post-Vatican II, he said, look, America is done. America is done because, you know, we are a frivolous people. We have to privatize our religion to go out and make money. And he predicted everything that is happening. The book is phenomenal. Go find it. There's used copies on Amazon. But it's so pertinent to the world that we live in today. But I started seeing all these things. And you know, my wife and I, we adopted three kids, Kennedy. It's been really, you know, adoption, the adoption journey with all three of our children who are adopted from Russia and Ukraine has been so humbling. It was just such a challenge, and it really brought me to my knees. And I was there in our evangelical church, and I was just sitting there one day thinking, you know, I just knew I needed the sacrament. I needed a sacrament because if I heard another sermon, another rhetorically polished 40-minute sermon that was going to uplift me, you know, that I was just going to feel like a piece of crap the next day and you know, have to wait till next Sunday, right?
So you needed something that was going to give you stability.
Yeah, and then you know what? I found my way to this to a traditional parish, a fraternity parish in Richmond, Virginia, and I had been avoiding them because I had heard. You know, I was listening to Bishop Barron, Word on Fire, and all this, and I heard about how tragic with these horrible people and all this. But I went, and the first day that I was there, I remember I was, like, talking to this guy about Augustine or Aquinas or something in the hall, and his wife was getting really impatient. They had her, and she just looked at me, and she said, do you have a rosary? And she was like, and I said, well, no, I don't even know what a rosary is, pretty much. So she walked over, and they had this little basket, you know, with the little rosary pamphlets, and she said, here, just pray this. And she, like, stuck it up to me, and she's like, grabbed her husband, and she said, we gotta go. And so I went home that night, and I went up to our room, and I shut the door. And
secret.
Oh, whoa! And it changed my life. I mean, that's all I have to say. I mean, a lot of people are going to understand that. It just completely rocked my world. And now I have this rosary habit. I got, I don't know, like 40 of them or something. It's just, you know, I'm just a baby as a Catholic, Kennedy, but I love being Catholic. As you said, you know, I know about all the corruption. I was there in Rome for 5 weeks, the entire 5 weeks, the Amazonian Synod. I recorded the opening and the closing mass when all the Marxists were dancing around, singing all their Marxist songs and the Pachamama and all that, you know. Look, those aren't Catholics. Right? I mean, that's not Catholicism. I know that. And the thing that's great about being Catholic is that we just have to know what the church teaches. It's not what I feel or what I think anymore. We know what the church teaches, and we can put our faith in the church because it is the body of Christ. And that's the lens that I try to see everything through now.
Well, you know, and that one of my priests, wonderful man, he's an Irish priest, and when we were discovering tradition, we had such wonderful friends, and we still do have some wonderful friends who don't attend a traditional mass, and then they're just, I don't know how they're still pushing through the Novus Ordo situation here in Ontario, because it is really bleak, but they are, and that's fine, that's where their roots are, and they raise their kids, and they're just trying to make lemonade, I guess. But they're like one of them, you know, one of my friends, Paul, he's an amazing man. He's a godmother or godfather, him and his wife, godparents of my daughter. And I would trust him with my life. And they raised their kids in Novus Ordo Parish, and they're good dairy farmers and just good, solid Dutch Catholics. And they know there's problems. They're just there, and they're just trying to, I don't know, they don't want to abandon the ship, I guess. But point is, when we were discovering tradition,